Okay, I think we should probably make a start. Christina, can you let us know the apologies received and who was on the call?
Sure. From the CCNSO, we have Hugo Akiri, Martin Boyle, Keith Davidson, Christy Spain, Stephen Deerhake, Eberhard Lisse, Catherine Reynolds, Nigel Roberts, and Dottie Sparks DeBlanc. From the GAC, we have Frank Marsh and Suzanne Riddell. From Liaisons, we have Cheryl Langdon Orr and Carlos Aguirre. From Staff Support and Special Advisors, we have Jaap Akkerhuis, Bart Boswinkel, Kim Davies, Christina Nordstrom, and Bernie Turcott. Apologies from Paulus Miranda and Bill Senek.
Okay. Does that cover all apologies and everybody on the call or on the Adobe Room? Thank you, Christina. It looks like we have a very good turnout for this call, so my urging on the list for working group members to participate might have worked. So let's hit the agenda at full speed, and we have the meeting report from the 12th of January meeting. Bernie, I don't think there's anything specifically in that report that isn't otherwise on the agenda, except for one thing, and that was Bill Semich raised an issue which he raised by email, which sort of relates to some of the topic of misbehaviour and so on that we haven't really covered off on elsewhere. So I think I might make that issue raised by Bill in his last email to the list a matter arising for the next meeting of this working group, and hopefully Bill will be on the call and be able to specifically address those concerns that he had at that time. So other than that, Bernie, is there anything in terms of the meeting report that is of concern or not otherwise on the agenda?
I don't think so. Except for having accepted the significantly interested parties' public consultation, the rest was fairly straightforward.
Okay. Does anyone have any issues or items they wish to raise relating to the meeting report? I see Eberhard has his hand raised. Eberhard.
I was basically absent. I only listened in for about 5 minutes when I was in the operating room. So I should be listed as apologies.
Oh, okay. Noted. Thank you. Any other issues or items not otherwise covered on today's agenda that arose from last week? If not, let's please move on. And item three on our agenda is discussion on the GAC response on the consent topic. I note Suzanne and Frank both on the call today. And firstly, Suzanne and Frank, our thanks to the GAC. We know and understand the GAC's fairly busy with some other topics at the moment. So thank you for prompting the GAC to respond. I guess in general, it seems there's a fairly sympathetic view from the GAC to what the framework of interpretation working groups trying to do here. So I'm just wondering, Frank or Suzanne, do you want to talk us through the couple of points that you raise in your submission, particularly the 60-day deadline, and give us your views as to why you thought these things were relevant to the consent document?
Hi, Keith. I'll defer to Suzanne on this. Suzanne was more responsible for drafting the document than I was, so Suzanne, so do you.
Okay. Thank you, Frank, and thank you, Keith. It just struck us as we looked at the text that if there were not a timeline, and maybe this is our ignorance, so bear with us, that absent a timeline, you could have an unintended consequence, that either an inability or a refusal to provide consent could sort of just simply cause a redel request to be null and void. And we weren't entirely sure that that would be your intention. Does the idea of a timeline cause discomfort?
I don't know. I think that's the test. And I see already Nigel and Eberhard both have their hands raised, so let's find out. Nigel.
First of all, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I'll make it fairly brief. I'm uncomfortable not with the proposed guideline. I think if we were debating policy, it would be a valid proposal. But I'm confused and concerned that what we're just trying to do is a very limited thing of trying to interpret the policy that we've got, and there's nothing in the policy that actually specifies the particular timeline. It's a very good way to highlight the fact that the IANA is operating without specific policies and in these sorts of areas, but I think it's outside our remit to specify something when we're just interpreting documents.
Okay, but perhaps a suggestion that a 60-day period would be an appropriate period for a response or something like that. That's not really inventing policy. It's just sort of trying to provide a time frame in which would be acceptable. I think, would that satisfy you, Nigel?
Well, no, it wouldn't raise the. It wouldn't satisfy the concern that it's not it's not about this one specific point, which in itself seems relatively harmless. But it's the idea that in this group that we can introduce new procedures or new policies. That's not really for us to do. We're here to interpret the meaning of the existing policy, and where we find that there are lacuna and it's lacking, to say so, and maybe point out where policy or procedures need to be tightened up.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. And I notice on the chat in Adobe that Patricio Pavlete has just joined, so if we can note that in the attendees. Thanks, Christina. And Eberhard, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, as I said in my email, I don't think there can be an automatism or any arbitrary deadline. I agree with Nigel that we also would be making policy. And I also quoted an extreme example. For example, if there is a coup in any one developing country without a proper democracy, then the incumbent manager is detained without warrant or whatever. And the son-in-law of the new deputy undersecretary for paperclip puts in a redelegation request. The GEC suggestion could then trigger an automatic redelegation after 60 days. That's not a consented form. So I think we must be very careful how we do that. And I do not think we should make policy. That's for the PDP.
Okay. Does that clarify for you, Suzanne, there are two real aspects there. One is that it may be a policy development specifically rather than an interpretation, and the other is that there may be instances where 60 days is too short a period in any case. Would that help alleviate the GAC's concern in that regard?
If I could say, then I guess I have some questions back, if I may. I understood the document to be, in fact, the entire exercise here, to be attempting to interpret the existing guidance, to sort of bring it up to date and to overcome all of the problems that were identified in the Dell-Redell working group analysis. This is, and you're tackling it serially, issue by issue. So as I read the document, that you are proposing guidelines in a number of areas, And then you are asking the IANA functions operator to actually implement your guidelines in the form of new procedures, right? And so it just struck us that without some kind of a time frame, and it, you know, if you all think, so, well, let me tackle the first one. Is this implementation or policy? Obviously, this is an FOI working group issue, so I need to largely defer to you all. It would be helpful to know if that view that it's policy, not implementation, is shared by all the members of the FOI working group. But I guess to our minds, it seemed more like an implementation aspect. If you have to obtain consent, which is, seems completely logical, how do you avoid a situation where you can never obtain consent? Does the incumbent have the right to simply never respond? Or what if you cannot find the incumbent? Let's say there is a coup or a civil war or whatever. So I guess I'm a little bit confused, Nigel and Eberhardt, and my apologies if I'm missing things, but it just seems to me, from our perspective, we did not see that as policy necessarily. We saw that as the FOI working group kind of refining what exists as a concept today in the underlying policy documents. But what is missing is any sense of, well, how long should it take, could it take?
Okay. Well, I guess the issue, if I could be so bold as to try and summarize the working group's thinking on consent, they're either... The working group believes either there is consent or there isn't consent, and I guess if there is no response at any point, then that isn't that, or no response is the equivalent of no consent. So an absent CCTLD manager, for example, can't consent. So a redelegation happens under a non-consenting process rather than a consenting process. So, yeah, putting a timeline on it is sort of deeming consent to have happened when it hasn't. I think that might be the fear. But I see I've got a number of people wishing to speak to the issues. So there's Cheryl, Eberhardt and Nigel. So Cheryl, firstly.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'm going to offer the transcript record.
Sorry, Cheryl, you're breaking up.
It just strikes me, and I apologise for any background noise that might be happening. I'm in a fairly public place at the moment. The issues raised by the GAC is very valid, and I certainly see the desirability for the type of language to exist somewhere that they propose, and it may be that the GAC needs. I also see that in that sort of process that would happen in a more PVP-based issue rather than what we're doing in terms of interpretation, you'd be able to do the what if and maybe language, which of course we don't have the mandate or the inclination to do in this work group. But I'd all reference to the very reasonable desire of the GAC to not have unintended consequences in this, well worthwhile. So I just wanted to perhaps square bracket to come back to this and make sure it gets picked up somewhere, opportunity. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Cheryl. Eberhardt.
I've got two things. Suzanne, it's not you, it's us. We all members of this working group are on equal footing as far as we are concerned. Secondly, I can live with if we say on a certain, let's say 60, 90 day, if consent is not given, then it's utterly not consent.
Yes.
I cannot live with after 90 days or 60 days, then it's automatic consent, but I can live with, if he does apply at some stage, then it's an unconsented one.
Excellent. Thank you.
I'm sorry to break the queue. Could I ask a question then?
Sure.
Thank you. But that is actually very helpful, and as you'll see on the second bullet that the GAC had under this, we just, and maybe this is where it all gets resolved, clarification that this issue will, in fact, be addressed in your subsequent paper on unconsented redelegations.
Yes, I think that's probably true. it probably will be. I mean, it certainly is on the agenda to be discussed and resolved. So, and I noticed Martin's added a tick of agreement to that conceptually, and Nigel has his hand up. So, Nigel.
Yeah, I think we're actually quite close on this. I could read, now that I realise what Eberhard was saying, I could read this in two ways. Eberhard obviously read it one way, and I obviously read it the other way. It's an unintended consequence that a refusal to provide consent. Is it possible that you actually mean failure to provide consent rather than refusal? Because if it's a refusal, then there's clearly no consent.
That's an excellent point, Nigel.
Okay. Now, the second point is that if that's the case, I'm in agreement with the thrust of what you're saying here, but I still have concerns that this working group shouldn't be setting things down. It is more procedure than policy. It might be a matter for the IANA contractor when looking at the, and I'm going to say the rules, which is going to be what we're interpreting, to say that, you know, we pick a 60-day figure at the end of which we close the file. That might be reasonable, but I don't think it's for us to say that. That's my point. I'm not arguing over whether you should or shouldn't do something along these lines. I'm arguing over the fact that this working group's remit doesn't cover doing specifying timeframes.
Okay. Thanks, Nigel. And Frank has his hand raised. Frank.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. I just wanted to comment on a point that Eberhard made about the status of people speaking here. I mean, obviously, in this call, we are all on the same status, same level, but in fact, the paper we have is from the GAC, not from any individual. So
sure.
What Suzanne is pointing out is the GAC position, not her own personal position. I think that should be firmly understood. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Frank, and good point. This is the GAC's input, but I think it's for this working group to develop a clearer understanding of
absolutely. I'm not denying that in any sense at all, of course. And in fact, both Suzanne and I will be prepared to comment back to the GAC along those lines at any point.
If I could chime in, Frank is completely correct, and I think your point, Nigel, whether we really meant to say failure than refusal, we will certainly carry that message back to confirm for all of you, and that may well be a useful amendment now that we have clarification on bullet number two that you will, in fact, address a refusal in the next paper.
In a future paper, yep.
A future paper, sorry, not the next one. My apologies. Future.
Yep. Okay, I hope whoever siren that is, that they're not in any disaster area. I have Nigel's hand up, and I'm not sure whether he just failed.
Just haven't put it down.
Okay, and then Martin, then Eberhard. So, Martin.
Thanks, Keith. I'd like to come in on the procedure and the way in which one might confer a time limit over to IANA. I think the message I'm getting is that if somebody doesn't answer and there is no deadline, then essentially the whole process can end up being stalled because the person hasn't answered. And there does need to be some opportunity for really us saying to IANA or putting a recommendation in ourselves that the move to it being an unconsented redelegation process would happen whether the incumbent answered and said no, or whether the incumbent just didn't bother to answer. And in particular, if he doesn't answer, I think there is that sort of problem that you know, the incumbent operator might be dead. He might have gone and lived, gone to live somewhere else. You know, there is no real reason for not turning around and saying that there should be a timescale, and whether we recommend what might be reasonable. This is procedure, it is not policy, but indicating that a reasonable timescale should be set for a response.
Okay, thank you, Martin. And Eberhard?
Two things. With you, I meant, I didn't mean it's individual input, I know it's GAC input, I meant that Frank and Suzanne are members of the framework interpretation group, so one shouldn't have a you and us consideration here. As far as I'm concerned, everybody on this group, while deliberating per email or per telephone conference, is on the same footing. And then I can live very well with if we say, if we point out that there is no deadline, and a deadline maybe should be set or can be set, and what should or could happen if the deadline isn't met. But I don't think it's for us to decide deadlines. We are not allowed to make. We are not here to make policy.
Yeah, I think I think deciding a timeline is definitely not an invention of policy. It's a procedural thing. A timeline is only ever going to be a procedure.
Yeah, but it's not for us to set procedure. That's my point.
Yeah, but a suggestion from the working group to IANA that a period like 60 days may be appropriate wouldn't be an invention of policy, in my view, and may be quite desirable from the perspective of saying, well, you know, yes, you can't expect a 24-hour turnaround, okay. Nor can you delay this indefinitely. So,
Keith, if I may?
Yes, certainly
not. No, you're not on.
That's why I asked for it.
Sorry.
My hand is up, really. This is going on my nerves. Everybody is talking in without having the floor.
Okay, Eberhard has his hand raised, so Eberhard first, then Nigel.
I wanted to say it's quite irritating if people jump in without having the floor. Everybody who can say wants to say something can do so. I think either this group makes policy or it doesn't. But on previous occasions we were told we cannot make policy when some of us wanted to make something. I think we should be quite clear on this and not do that.
Okay, thank you, Eberhard. Nigel.
Okay, thank you, Eberhard.
That was interesting.
That was very interesting. Eberhard has...
Well, you said, Nigel.
Yeah, Eberhard has basically said what I was going to say, although I prefer to characterize this as writing detailed policy than procedure, than policy, detailed procedure rather than policy. But either way, we're not here to do that. It's for the IANA contractor to do that. And I'm concerned about the effect it has on the work of the working group when other things come up that people say that we should put in the report to recommend to IANA to do that's not policy or that's not interpretation, it's policy or procedure. So I'm not concerned too much about this particular point because, as I said at the beginning, I think the actual point is fairly harmless and probably in the right circumstances beneficial. I'm concerned about the effects on the working group.
Okay, noted.
Keith?
Okay.
Keith, I'm sorry, and apologies to colleagues. I am not on the Adigo thing, so I haven't put my hand up. So I'm joining the queue, asking to be in the queue the old-fashioned way.
The floor is yours, Suzanne.
Thank you ever so much. I have to say I'm a bit confused because my understanding was that it was the intention of the FOI working group to provide the maximum amount of guidance possible to overcome all of the inconsistencies and subjective decision-making that the Del Riedel Working Group has had uncovered. And so I'm just a little bit baffled if a timeline cannot be sort of offered up as an implementation process point. Well, then how does that leave, where does that leave the decision-making as to how much time is an appropriate amount of time? So I'm just a little bit confused. If this FOI working group doesn't tackle this, where would it be tackled? How would it be addressed? I guess let's put it that way. Frank and I will want to understand that to be able to report back.
Okay.
And I'm confused on that point.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Thank you, Suzanne. And I see Becky and Eberhard both have their hands raised. So firstly, Becky.
Hi. I certainly understand the sort of the concern about, you know, in general about what happens if there's a failure to respond. To me, sort of putting aside the question of whether it's policy or interpretation and whether it's in or out of the scope of the working group, which I haven't really thought about, it just seems to me that there are a category of issues that we ought to keep on a list for sort of when we get all the way through just interpreting the document and can look at as at the issue as a whole would be things that we would sort of raise at that time. I mean, I think, as Nigel said, you know, there is some potential for, you know, there is some potential for misuse of a absence of a deadline, but we actually sort of don't know how that would affect things until we get, for example, through unconsented delegation. So, I don't mean to dismiss or minimize the concern of the GAC, because I think it's a reasonable concern. I just wonder if what we ought to be saying is, we hear you, that's an issue that is sort of premature right now given where we are, but it's an issue that we understand and acknowledge.
Okay, thanks, Becky. And I have Eberhard and then Desiree. Eberhard.
If I look at the charter under scope, based on and taking into account the findings of and issues identified by the DRDW, the working group is tasked to develop interpretations of the policy statements to resolve the issues identified by the DRD working group in a consistent and coherent manner. I do not think that allows us to tell the IANA function contractor what deadline it should set.
Okay, thanks, Eberhard. Desiree. Desiree, we can't hear you.
It's muted.
Okay, Desiree, I see you on chat, you've said, sorry. So we'll wait for you to type that, and in the meantime, while you're typing, Desiree, Frank has his hand raised. So, Frank.
Yeah, just remembering in time to remove myself off mute. Just picking up on the point, I think there is an issue around here. I think that the GAC position highlights the issue that a deadline would be, the lack of a deadline is a gap. I think the 60-day is one which could be interpreted as setting specific policy, and I can understand the concerns that Eberhard and others have on that. I think I would personally be very, very comfortable in reporting back to the GAC that the group has taken note of the need for a deadline and that this will be addressed, whether it's in this paper or another one. From my personal point of view, I would have no concerns. And I'd be very comfortable in reporting that back to the GAC. I'm not speaking obviously for Suzanne or anybody else on this, but that does seem to me this general acceptance that there is a bit of a gap that could be addressed and that it's a useful contribution from the GAC, and I think that's helpful. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Frank. And I still haven't seen the question appear from Desiree, so and I note Nigel's sort of agreeing with Frank's comments there. So, Bernie, or do you have any observations? Is there anything that should influence the actual consent document as drafted?
Yes, sir. One thing I think is relevant, I believe it was in the SIP document in the original draft version, we had included several deadlines of this type, and I believe it was around October or November when we looked at that document, and I think everyone in the working group at that point agreed that those were implementation issues and not really what we were going to deal with. So when I read this, I come a little bit to the same conclusion. The thrust of the consent document is that the only consent is positive, confirmed consent as we presented it. What happens when we don't have that, as Becky and others have pointed out, we've got some work to finish. So I don't know if that helps, but that's definitely some of the decisions that were taken by the working group previously.
Okay, thanks, Bernie. Look, I think we're getting close to understanding from Frank's last observation a need, and we'll carry on with that. Any further discussion?
Could I just ask a question about, were there questions on any of the other points raised in the GAC submission?
There hasn't been on the list, but this is the opportunity to look at that. I mean, certainly I think from my personal observations of the working group, things like the GAC's strong recommendation in the next point that the FOI working group guidelines be amended to include the requirement that terminology on the IANA website be made consistent with the FOI working group terminology, definitely we'd all agree. So I don't think there'll be any controversy in regards to those sorts of recommendations, and they're most useful to the working group.
Okay, and then the final point, and that may be one that is ignorance on my part, that this is a generally agreed assumption that whatever is drafted in response to your guidelines will in fact be reviewed and cleared, whether by the FOI working group or the full CCNSO. I don't know. I'm guessing the full CCNSO, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. The FOI working group on its own is not empowered to do anything more than report back to the CCNSO. But the hope is that both the CCNSO and the GAC in entirety will agree with the final outputs, and then with some form of endorsement of both those constituent bodies, refer to the ICANN board the final outputs for the ICANN board to implement. So yes, this working group is not empowered to do that on its own and is accountable back to its constituent parts.
Thank you.
No problems. Okay, any further observations or questions for the GAC relating to their response? Did I see Desiree's question? I'm sorry, I've lost my Adobe Connect session with a blip of internet. Did it appear on chat? Did anyone see Desiree's question, and has it been answered?
Yes, I've got
it. Did appear.
I can read it. GAC has raised an important policy question, and I think we would need to acknowledge that deadline issue, but not but not get further. Agree that PDP working group would address it. My question is, do we as a group respond to GAC, or do Susan and Frank convey it, and are they happy with that? With that process, and I think I already commented on that I personally would be very happy to take back to the GAC the sentiments that have been expressed and the reason and the outcome from the GAC comments.
Okay, and so Frank, if we could note that as the sort of formal conclusion that you will take that back to the GAC and come back to this group in due course.
Okay, I do apologize to everybody for chiming in. Frank, I may have misunderstood you. Is the message we are taking back that this issue of a deadline would be addressed in a PVP?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. I had missed that. I thought there was still quite a bit of discussion as to whether a deadline is a policy versus an implementation issue. So I had understood Becky to say, well, why don't we put that sort of aside as an issue that we need to address. I hadn't realized that the group had already decided to go the route of a PDP.
Martin has his hand raised. Martin.
Yes, I didn't think we did either. I thought we said that we would look at this when we got to the unconsented redelegation process and see whether we could or whether we should be saying something about some deadlines at that particular stage and at least that we could flag that perhaps some deadline was needed but not to go further than that. I didn't think we were saying that we must have a PDP just on how long a deadline should be because certainly my own feeling is that is not policy. It's actually the process that IANA would go through deciding when it was no longer worthwhile waiting any longer for somebody to reply who wasn't going to reply.
Yeah, I think the suggestion was that if necessary, a PDP would be done, but probably that this would be resolved as we further our work in any case, I think is my interpretation of where we're at. Stephen has his hand raised, so Stephen. Stephen, you're still on mute.
Sorry about that. My understanding echoes Frank's and your interpretation of where we are, and I suspect this won't be the only issue that either is going to be looked at later or may well be into a list of things that a PDP might need to be formed to address down the road. But I don't see that we need to do this now.
Okay. Well, I think Becky's comment on the chat in the Adobe room is very relevant and probably the appropriate closure to this discussion point. That is to note that it is a legitimate issue should be reviewed in unconsented redelegation when we get to that section, including the question of whether establishing a deadline is within the working group's remit. So with that, can we agree that that is the point that we will note as our future action point on this issue? Thank you. And are there any other issues relating to the GAC's input from anyone? Any other aspect that people disagree with? Any other aspect that people agree with? Okay, thank you. Thank you again, Suzanne and Frank, for corralling the GAC to supply the input and I think it's been most useful input, and we will continue to look at the specific issue raised or specific unresolved issue. Okay, can we move along on our agenda? The next item on our agenda is the public consultation process for the SIP consultation, and Bart, is this yours to report back on?
Hello, good evening. I'm preparing the public forum. The idea is to open up the public comment period on this one as of tomorrow or early next week. It will run until the end of March as a public comment, and then the reply period will end around the end of April. So, there's nothing more to report back on. Say the document itself has been approved and adopted by the FOI working group itself, so that's all.
Okay, thank you, Bert. So it's proceeding through the new consultation process, 21 days for consultation, then 21 days for review. So it will be open during ICANN Costa Rica, which is probably quite useful. And Eberhard has his hand raised. Eberhard. Eberhard. Eberhard, we're not hearing you.
Sorry, I just wanted to say that I want the document to be movable, but it has been done already.
Ah, okay. Thank you. Okay, any further comments in terms of the SIP consultation? I assume, again, the GAC will provide some feedback in due course, but probably after the public consultation period's closed, which will be after the Costa Rica ICANN meeting. No further comments relating to the public consultation. Thank you, Bart. Can we move on to revocation, item 5 on the agenda? And thank you, Bernie, for posting the summary document of the email discussion on misbehaviour the other day, and there's been some subsequent list discussion. Bernie, can you sort of give us a summary of where we're at with the revocation document?
Yes, sir. I'll just put up the document. I'll be with you in a sec. There we go. Essentially, I think we've reached a point where we've got quite a number of people that consider the significantly misbehaved clause applies to incumbents. We've got a few people that do not, and we've probably got a few people that are yet to be undecided. And I don't think there's been much traffic on this since the beginning of the week. I haven't noticed any at any rate.
Okay. I'm not really sure where that leaves us, Bernie. We seem to get quite close some form of unanimity for the working group and then drifted apart again. I really wouldn't like to go forward with a document that doesn't have at least a strong consensus of the working group. So.
Well, I think we've been arguing a great deal about whether significantly misbehave applies to incumbents or not, and we're leaving aside the question pre-RFC 1591 or not. But one thing that might be helpful, I think we've seen on the list, is before trying to close off this topic, trying to understand what significantly misbehave means and what IANA stepping in means, because I think to a certain extent we're arguing about a concept that's got very little details around it given that we don't know what those terms mean. I mean, everyone may have their own definition of what they think it means, but the point is it might be beneficial, I would think, to look into, for the working group, to look into interpreting those statements, because it might clarify some of the maybe unstated concerns that saying this applies or not.
Yeah, well, I think that's what my last email to the list on this topic was trying to get people's heads around. I mean, yeah, stepping in sort of has conjures up all sorts of connotations of meaning in my mind from the sending an email saying you've been bad, incumbent CCTLD manager, mend your ways, to re-delegation and any other steps in between. So I think having clarity around that might be quite useful, and it's worth further debate before we try and resolve this as an issue, and I certainly invite that debate. So any comments in terms of this process of what sort of misbehaviour would constitute IANA stepping in and what IANA stepping in might mean? No? Catherine, to hand raised. Catherine.
Hi, Keith. Thanks. Yes, it's Catherine Reynolds. I had a thought about this, that, and I'm totally just putting this out there. If we want to understand what substantially or misbehavior is under 1591, would it be of any use to look at what it really did mean, what it meant, and also what IANA has done, as what stepping in has meant in the past. What did IANA do in the past? And we could perhaps document that, what it has meant in the past for IANA to step in, and in what circumstances, and whether or not we agree that those are the right. The right circumstances or the right what should be stepping in going forward, it may answer that question.
Yeah, I think, Catherine, we probably did that as part of the process of the delegation-redelegation working group, and IANA's stepping in was a highly variable kind of process.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I know. I've seen that in the. I've seen all of the ways that stepping in meant. I guess then what we have to do is look beyond that. Then is what we're being asked to do and make. Sort of, it's make a. Go beyond the sort of evidence that's already out there and put our own opinions around that. I guess that's what I understand we should be doing.
Okay. Look, I think it's something that I think I might try and re-raise on the list. Maybe it's one of those items that might be better debated on list. And I think if we're no closer to achieving some sort of consensus over the next week or so on the list, perhaps it is the topic that we should put on our agenda for the Costa Rica face-to-face meeting and try and resolve it in the room. Let's continue on list and see if we can get some further harmonisation of views. Eberhard has his hand raised. So, Eberhard.
I think we should maybe approach it from backwards. First look at whether IANA ever has stepped in, under what conditions, and what have they done. And then we can look at what substantial misbehavior would mean, what persistent problems mean, and then decide what we feel appropriate step, what we think step in means. Okay. I also want to mention that we must not speak of IANA, we must speak of the IANA function contractor or function operator.
Yep, vehicle. I think IANA is kind of our accepted abbreviation for the IANA function. Can we take it as read when anyone mentions IANA, they mean the IANA function, and otherwise should specify the IANA contractor, etc. Martin and then Eberhard. Martin.
Thanks, Keith. It's just a sort of little question because I must admit I had a certain degree of problems trying to go over the rather large volume of correspondence. As to whether there is enough material now for somebody, not other than me, to look through those and see whether they can put down the text or some form of text indicating where there are outstanding disagreements. Because it seemed to me in a couple of places that, as you said yourself, Keith, that there seemed to be some move to convergence that then sort of drifted off the front burner at various stages. And I just wonder whether if we actually had, perhaps before we get involved in the next round of email slugging, something that actually said, right, okay, you know, here really are the outstanding points, and then start off by agreeing that, yeah, we all agree that those are the outstanding points, and then just sit down and address those one by one as we've done in other parts of this process.
Yep, good idea, Martin. Bernie, is that possible from your perspective to draw together those strings?
Having produced the summary and having read these things in great detail, I don't think we're there yet. I think, as I said earlier, we probably can do that once we've tackled having a look at what significant misbehavior means and what stepping in means. Once we do that, then we'll probably have enough elements to create a list of things we can address individually. But right now, where we are is a strong number of people agreeing significant misbehavior applies to incumbent managers. We've got a few people that say it cannot, and we've got a few other people that seem to be sort of on the fence. So I don't know if there's a number of list of issues under that we can address separately. I mean, the point is either you think that significant misbehavior applies to incumbent managers or not. So I think what we were suggesting earlier is the thing that might make a difference to help us approach that in a more section fashion as we've done in the past is looking at what would cause someone to be considered significantly misbehaved. And once we have that, also understand what it means for IANA to step in, because we have neither definition. These are just terms that are used once in RFC 1591 in section 3.4, and we certainly don't have a common understanding. We don't have anything we can write down as a list of positions defining these things, and I think that's really, to my mind, clearly the next step we have to go, and then we'll be able to reassemble this with all the positions with a full understanding of that point and try and resolve them or not.
Okay.
Keith, can I say something? I can't raise my hand. This is Dottie.
Dottie, I'll put you on the list, but there have been a number of people with their hands up for some time. So
okay.
I'll have Eberhardt, Patricio, Nigel, then Dottie. Eberhardt.
The discussion has moved past that issue that I wanted to make. I don't think we can think of IANA as the IANA function. The IANA function does not perform action. It doesn't make policies. Okay? We must be clear about what we're talking about. If we speak about IANA abbreviated form, we speak about the IANA function operator. Under the new contract with the U.S. government, the IANA staff members are not allowed to participate in policy making. They must be far removed from this. So we should be very careful in our terminology.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for the reminder, for your comment. Patricio.
Yeah. Hi. Well, besides my comment in chat room that the word used in the RFC is substantial instead of significant when they talk about misbehavior, I think that before analyzing what stepping in means on what it means for misbehavior to be substantial, we need to decide whether that particular phrase, that particular sentence applies to misbehavior that could have happened at any time during the exercise of the functions of the designated manager, or only in the process of its being appointed initially. The phrase, the sentence, is in the middle of a section that generally deals with that initial appointment, that designation. But on the other hand, it seems to me that this document, important as it is, it's not particularly well organized. And I believe that sentence applies more generally to misbehavior that could have happened at any time. Because otherwise there are things like section number 3, where there are a lot of requirements on the designated manager to be equitable to all groups, for instance. And there is no punishment in case that doesn't happen. What if the manager isn't fair to all the groups? I think that would be one thing that could trigger this IANA stepping in. That's in the next section.
Okay. Thanks, Patricio. Nigel.
Okay, two things. I'm a bit confused by what Martin said about extensive correspondence. I got the impression from Keith on the email that there'd been a kind of a dearth of correspondence and you were trying to whip us up to it. I also want to underline, again, what I said on the list, which Patricio is rightly banging on the chat room about. It's not significant misbehavior. The phrase is substantial. And at the risk of self-referential here, it's got to be a misbehavior that is substantial.
Thank you, Nigel, and noted. Sorry, I was significantly and substantially misbehaving myself by using the wrong term. And so noted. And going back to your first point, Nigel, I think the mailing list discussion has been around the edges of the issues, I feel. It's not that there hasn't been any conversation. It's just not been actually attacking the core of both what misbehaviour might mean and what IANA stepped in might mean. I think Bernie was just emphasising that as being something that we should be more substantially concentrating on rather than peripheral issues. So, And Dottie had her hand raised.
Well, I was Bernie basically said in so many words exactly what I was going to say, and I find it hard to wrap my arms around the phrase substantial misbehavior. I mean, I'd prefer misconduct, but in order to declare whether there's misbehavior or misconduct, there has to be an articulated list of expectations or deliverables. And I think that everything that we outline as a recommendation has to represent a measurable deliverable. And that should be the guideline that we follow, because otherwise you're just going into vague terms that don't have any specific meanings.
Okay, thank you, Dottie. So, the question in my mind is that if we can't define, then we have to disregard. I'm keen that we should exhaust the possibility of seeking to define both misbehaviour and stepping in might mean. So I think with that, let's revert to a bit further list conversation, and I'll try and stimulate some further debate on the basis of the recent responses to my last message to the list, and see if I can tease out a bit further conversation. And again, I think if we're unable to resolve or get closer to resolution on this, then it probably should form the core of our discussions for Costa Rica. Any further comments then? I see Nigel has his hand raised. Is that because you didn't take it down, or do you have a new point, Nigel? His hand has gone, so... Okay, any further discussion on this topic? So we'll revert to further conversation on the list. Anything else in terms of the overall paper on revocation? As I said earlier, I thought Bill Semich raised some very valid points in an email to the list, his last email to the list, which was more than a week ago, and some of those aspects also need to be teased out going forwards, but since Bill isn't on the call, let's hold that and make that an agenda item for the next call. I'll try and address those issues raised by Bill on the list as well, and get some further conversation going on that. Anything else on the topic of revocation from anyone? If not, can we move on the agenda to our any other business? There is one item of other business that I've been asked to raise, and that was from Catherine Reynolds, who asked me to remind everybody, since there's a number of people on this call, that would all CCTLD managers please complete the Finance Working Group survey on contributions to ICANN that was sent out in December. So please, if you haven't responded to the Finance Working Group survey, could you do so? And yes, Catherine.
Oh, I just wanted to thank you for adding that in.
My pleasure, and I'm sure that will elucidate a huge number of responses, because there's obviously a lot of guilty consciences.
Oh, let's hope so.
Okay, and our future meetings, we have two further teleconference meetings scheduled before Costa Rica, one on February the 9th and one on February the 23rd, so we will talk again at 0500 UTC on February the 9th, and certainly we'll be engaged on the list. So thank you all. If there's no other items of other business, I'll close the meeting and we'll talk again in, I guess it's 2 weeks' time. Thank you all.